This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But personally, if you ask me, I'd like to live my life, you know, just look forward, live in peace. You know, after we suffered so much, I think we have a good opportunity to do it now. You know, both sides suffered so much.
That was Avichai Broaddutch from Israel's kibbutz Kfar Aza, whose wife and three young children were taken hostage on October 7th last year. Details coming up. Also, Tunisia is waiting for results from yesterday's presidential election. And the U.S. has just a month to go until the presidential election. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Tunisian President Kais Saied says he'll wait for official results before declaring victory in yesterday's election, but exit polls show him winning by a landslide. Only 27.7% of the electorate went to the polls. William Lawrence, a former diplomat in Tunisia and North Africa director of National Council on U.S. Arab Relations, is in Tunis and tells me and tells Carol Van Dam that most Tunisians were not interested in this election.
This is half the participation rate as when Saied was the first elected in 2019. And while it's comparable with the participation rate when the new constitutional referendum, which is that constitution Saied wrote himself, passed a little better than the 11% turnout for the last legislative elections, which were, I think, the second lowest in the history of modern democracies or modern voting. And so there's a general disgust of Tunisians with politics, and so they're either voting with Saied because of their disgust, or they're just not voting because they're disgusted. I must have talked with well over 100 people coming into Tunisia and around. And most of the people I talked to weren't voting. Now, the ones that were voting, only a few were voting for the opposition candidates because the three viable opposition candidates were all excluded. Nine candidates had various legal actions against them. Several were in jail. A total of 17 were excluded. And the two they allowed through, they put one in jail.
The president, Kais Saied, he imprisoned two of his main opponents earlier, like you mentioned, including a businessman. What can you tell us about those two men?
So all of these were trumped up charges. They were all invented. All the, you know, judicial and human rights and press organizations said so. And it's just part of a systematic effort by the police in Tunisia to execute the president's wishes by muzzling the opposition. There are over 170 political prisoners now. Over 1,000 people have been arrested and detained since the coup, and the entire parliament shut down and replaced with a yes-man parliament under new rules that allows them to control the parliament. And so no one takes the charges seriously.
You know, civil society leaders, lawyers, journalists, others have called this election a sham. Does the outside world see it that way? And if so, will there be any repercussions, do you think, for Saied?
Those that pay attention do. Most don't pay attention. You know, Tunisia is rather inconsequential in world affairs. And that's a long descent from the Tunisia that won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2015 after the historic saving of democracy in the 2013-14 period, becoming the only Arab democracy and the only very successful outcome of the Arab Spring. But because of the personality and style of the president, and I've met with senior officials from several governments here, including our own, because of the his style, they don't see any reason to push him harder or try to get him to change course because he's not listening.
You're there in Tunis, and you were just driving around in your car, you told me just a few minutes ago. What is it like on the streets? Are most people celebrating?
Nope, didn't see any celebrations at all. I saw some reported in the news, but I was downtown all around, so it's as if the election hadn't happened. And interestingly, you know, I was an observer in the 11 and 14 elections, and you know, there's usually, and has been around during the 19 elections, and the 18 municipal elections under which I saw a lot of the political campaign. There's usually a lot of paraphernalia and posters and leaflets and all of that, you know, the day after the election. Nothing. You would have no sense that an election had happened at all. In fact, a lot of international people remarked that it was interesting to have a presidential campaign without a campaign.
That was William Lawrence, a former diplomat in Tunisia and North Africa director of the National Council on U.S.-Arab Relations. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Tunis. Today, the world marks 1 year since an attack by Hamas militants in Israel set off a grinding war. In Israel, there were ceremonies to remember the 1,200 people killed in that attack and that more than 100 people still held hostage. There were protests and ceremonies in several countries to call attention to the nearly 42,000 Palestinians killed in Gaza since Israel began its assault against Hamas in the territory. Hamas marked the anniversary attack by firing rockets at Tel Aviv. Lebanon's Hezbollah, which has fired rockets at Israel all year in support of Hamas, also fired new barrages in recent weeks. Israel has increased its attacks in Lebanon, killing scores of Hezbollah militants and civilians. Lebanon's health ministry said an Israeli strike killed at least 10 firefighters in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Palestinian health officials said Israeli troops fatally shot a 12-year-old Palestinian boy in a refugee camp where the military said it fired on Palestinians, throwing stones at its forces. In the United States, President Joe Biden said he would not stop working for a ceasefire in the war, but also said the U.S. is committed to ensuring Israel's security. Leaders in Europe and other regions today condemned the Hamas attack a year ago and called for a ceasefire and aid to those affected by the war. Everyone in Israel has been affected by the past year of war. Many have lost loved ones. Others had their homes and communities destroyed during the Hamas attack on October 7th. VOA visited some of the hardest hit sites. Linda Gratstein reports.
For Talma Atsili, it's still October 7th, 2023. Her son Aviv was killed as he fought hundreds of Hamas gunmen who stormed their kibbutz near Oz, less than a kilometer from the Gaza border. Aviv's remains are still being held hostage in Gaza, so a temporary grave has been set up for him at the kibbutz.
I can't even think of what will be here, both in terms of security and in terms of the emotional strength required to return to a place that has absorbed so much loss. I very much enjoyed walking barefoot, both inside the kibbutz and in the fields, and now I have this sort of feeling that the land here is soaked in blood, and how can I continue to walk barefoot?
One quarter of Near Oz's residents were killed or taken hostage, and more than half the homes destroyed. In nearby Kibbutz Be'eri, more than 100 residents were killed, among them Hagi Avni, a father of five and member of the Be'eri security squad. His 9-year-old daughter, Eliel, writes his name on the wall of her former room.
I miss my daddy. I wanted to say goodbye to my house before they destroy it and rebuild it.
But many residents of Be'eri and other Gaza border communities doubt that they will move back in.
The question is how to live here with some kind of arrangement. Like with Egypt and Jordan.
A year on, hostage families still stage mass protest rallies demanding that the Israeli government bring back some 100 remaining hostages. Avichai Brodech from Kibbutz Kfar Aza began the protest movement days after his wife and three young children were taken hostage on October 7th. His family was released in the November hostage deal. But speaking at the ruins of his kibbutz, Brodich says Israeli society still feels the trauma.
As a nation, we have to remember this as part of the Jewish history to remember. But personally, if you ask me, I'd like to live my life, you know, just look forward, live in peace. You know, after we suffered so much, I think we have a good opportunity to do it now. You know, both sides suffered so much.
But a year later, a Gaza ceasefire and hostage release seem far away. For those in Israel missing loved ones and their lost communities, October 7th, 2023 is never ending. Linda Gradstein, VOA News in the Gaza border communities.
As tensions continue to rise between Israel and some of its neighbors, a year after the Gaza war began, the Kingdom of Eswatini is charting a different path, fostering close ties with Tel Aviv and inviting Israeli investment in key sectors of its economy. Nokuku Hanya Musi has this report from Mbabini Eswatini.
While some of nations are pulling away from Israel, Eswatini has positioned itself as a partner for potential Israeli investors in renewable energy, mining, and tourism. Talks on opening of an Israeli embassy in Eswatini could signify an even closer relationship. Adi Kohan Hazanov is the deputy chief of mission at the Israeli embassy in South Africa.
Eswatini and Israel share a very special and close bond in between the people, the nations, and the officials. For many years, Eswatini is supporting the right of Israel to defend itself, of its people, citizens, and sovereignty, and we highly appreciate the strong stand.
Alpheus Numalo, the Eswatini government spokesperson, says the bond between Eswatini and Israel has weathered global tensions. Now there are discussions regarding establishing an Israeli embassy in Eswatini, although no final decision has been made.
The Kingdom of Eswatini have always maintained warm and cordial diplomatic relations with the State of Israel over a stretched passage of time. So there is absolutely nothing that has changed in recent months or even years, even in the light of the current raging conflicts in the Middle East, for which the Kingdom of Eswatini has stated oftentimes that we wish that a peaceful solution and a speedy resolution should be found in as far as the raging conflict is concerned in the Middle East.
A year ago, Hamas militants in Gaza attacked Israel, killing about 1,200 people and taking dozens of hostages. Since then, Israeli forces have attacked Gaza, resulting in about 42,000 deaths. The Hezbollah militant group in Lebanon has fired on Israel since the Gaza conflict began, and in recent weeks, Israel dramatically stepped up its attacks in Lebanon, killing top Hezbollah leaders and many civilians. Iran, which backs Hamas and Hezbollah, has fired missiles at Israel, creating concerns of a massive Israeli retaliation. While South Africa cut ties with Israel in 2023 over Israel's war with Hamas, Eswatini has maintained its support for Israel. The economic ties are robust. In 2022, Israel exported $2.75 million US dollars worth of goods to Eswatini, and Eswatini exported $22.9 million US dollars worth of goods to Israel. Yael Uzan Tida, the head of Eswatini's Jewish community, welcomes a strengthening of the relationship.
A small group of Jewish in Eswatini enjoying, like all the other religion, the freedom of worship, the safe of life in Eswatini. The Israeli government has strong relationship with Eswatini that always supports us, and we appreciate that very much. The Jews were always involved in the economic development of the country, and today most of us are running businesses.
However, there is some criticism about the prospect of closer ties. Human rights lawyer Stelo Mgomezulu says a closer relationship with Israel is an effort by King Mswati's government to counter South Africa's regional influence on the Israel-Palestinian question.
I expect that the South African government will obviously take note of these developments and indeed understand that King Mswati's undemocratic regime is seeking to afford Israel a position of diplomatic influence in the Southern African region.
Mgomezulu says Israel could use its relationship with Eswatini to build support in other parts of the region, which could help counter United Nations votes that Israel sees as harmful to its interests.
Nokukhanya Musi, VOA News, Mbabane, Eswatini.
Ethiopian lawmakers today chose Foreign Minister Taye Kassalasi as the country's new president, a largely ceremonial role. Taye Kassalasi replaces Sahalawerk Zewde, a former diplomat who has served as president since 2018. That leaves Tanzania as the only African country with a woman as president, Samia Suluhu Hassan. Sahalawerk took on the presidency shortly after Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's rise to power in 2018. Taye Kassalasi becomes the fifth president since Ethiopia adopted its current constitution in 1995. He can hold the office for a maximum of 2 6-year terms. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. There is just 1 month to go in the U.S. presidential race between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at the state of the race.
Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are using this last month of their campaigns to try to make up ground in areas where they may be underperforming. Public opinion polls show Trump trailing Harris among women voters. In North Carolina, Trump vowed to protect women, who he says are poorer, less healthy, and less safe than when he was president.
Are paying much higher prices for groceries and everything else than they were 4 years ago. Are more stressed and depressed and unhappy than they were 4 years ago. I will fix all of that, women.
Access to abortion is one reason Trump is trailing Harris among women voters. He appointed Supreme Court justices who helped end more than 50 years of federal abortion protections. More than 20 states have imposed restrictions on abortion since that high court decision in 2022, including Georgia. Harris told supporters there that this vote is about women's freedoms.
One does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government should not be telling her what to do. If she chooses, she will talk with her pastor, her priest, her rabbi, her imam. But it should not be the government or Donald Trump telling her what to do with her body.
While Trump is trailing among women voters, he is leading with men.
I can't believe we're having this conversation again.
Efforts to get more men behind Harris include this commercial by the Anti-Trump Lincoln Project that says Harris is best for the middle class and asks men, what are you waiting for?
It's time to be a man and vote for a woman.
The economy continues to be the top issue for a majority of voters. Trump says he'll take jobs from other countries.
Here is the deal that I will be offering to every major company and manufacturer on earth. I will give you the lowest taxes, the lowest energy costs, the lowest regulatory burden, and free access to the best and biggest market on the planet, but only if you make your product here in America.
Harris is promising $25,000 in down payment assistance for first-time homebuyers.
I know what it is like for people to work hard and to save up and have a dream that is about the dignity of their work and an investment in their future, the future of their family, an investment in the pride they so rightly deserve because of their hard work.
Early voting is already underway in 23 states. In Minnesota, Maxine Maxim chose Harris.
We need a change. We need sense in the Capitol, in the White House, and we need rights for women.
Minnesota voter Eugene Audison chose Trump.
And I'd like somebody that can run a business. And if he can run a business, and he proved he can run the country, mm-hmm. You know, because he did it. Mm-hmm. But with Kamala, you still don't know what you stand for.
With most states heavily favoring either Trump or Harris, the winner will likely be determined by results from seven so-called swing states: Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, and Nevada. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Time now for our sports roundup. We have VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehias.
So, club football resumed this past weekend. Any games or leagues you would like to highlight?
Yeah, absolutely. If I'm going to highlight, I think the two most watched leagues across the continent of Africa, it would be the English Premier League and La Liga. So let's start off with English Premier League. League leaders, Liverpool. David Vandy, our producer, would love to hear about Liverpool and their dominating performance against Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace, one of the upcoming teams, they have a very young cast, so they kind of are a mid-table team that give a ton of top teams problems, but Liverpool was able to close it out and win 1-0. So they are in the lead at the moment. Currently they have 18 points and they are at the top of the Prem. You also have Arsenal versus Southampton. Arsenal goes down 1-0, but were able to then score three goals at home to win decisively against Southampton. Man City actually had a relatively interesting game against Fulham as well, another mid-table team. They were able to win 3-2. So top three teams in the league are, you know, Liverpool, Man City, and Arsenal. Chelsea and Aston Villa, interestingly enough, also have been playing relatively well. They both ended up with draws. Chelsea drew with Nottingham Forest 1-1, even though they've been very hot. And Aston Villa drew with Manchester United 0-0. So that was a great result for United, but not so great for Aston Villa. Now, La Liga, quickly, if we're going to touch on that, I would say the games that we were watching were Real Madrid had a 2-0 victory against Villarreal. They still have not lost yet, but they have, I believe, three draws in the season, relatively early in the season, but that's not usually what they do. They're still trying to figure out how to work together with this, what we call Project Mbappe. And then Barcelona was able to get a win against Alves, 3-0 victory. So top two teams in the La Liga were able to get decisive wins.
So let's change gear. The WNBA semifinals are about to wrap up tomorrow. What teams look the strongest going into the finals?
At the moment, the New York Liberty look like they are the strongest team in the WNBA. They were able to get their revenge against the Aces, who beat them last year for the championship, or on their way there. So the Liberty right now are waiting for the winner of the Suns and Lynx victory. So the series is tied 2-2. Game 5 will be played tomorrow. Whoever wins then will compete against the Liberty. First game will start on Thursday in a 5-game series. Liberty are well rested, Yehaes. They are ready to relax. They're waiting for their opponents. There's been a grueling semifinal on the other side, and they were able to have a nice, easy, comfortable victory. They really won decisively against the Aces. They're showing themselves to be a very dominant team.
And Mokbil, there is some sad news coming from Kenya's World Athletics. Can you fill us on that?
Absolutely. Kenyan former world 800 meters bronze medalist Kipyogen Bett died on Sunday from kidney and liver failure at the young age of 26. You know, he had a ban actually because he tested positive for a performance-enhancing drug called EPO in 2018. Prior to that, he was a very promising middle distance runner. We are seeing this time and time again, Yehaeus, with Kenyan athletics, a lot of doping and banned substance uses. There has to be more regulation within the Kenya Federation, as they are one of the best athletic organizations and countries on the continent. So condolences to his family.
VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.